Hello, and welcome to Asbury Methodist Church's podcast. My name is Forrest Devinney. I'm the lead pastor here at Asbury. And I hope this podcast will enrich your walk with Christ. Hope it will increase your knowledge of the Bible. And I hope it will be at least a little bit entertaining for you as we go through it. This Sunday, I am wrapping up my sermon series on the book of Ephesians. And I'm going to be talking about the very last bit of it, the whole armor of God. And so, I want to limit kind of how much I talk about this in the podcast because, you know, I want you to come to church on Sunday. but I do want to just, you know, if you want to read in advance of Sunday, if you want to, like, study that passage in preparation, by all means, you know, that's Ephesians 6, 10 through 20. Read it. Pray over it, think about it, try and ponder how it applies to your life, if you would like to. But by all means, you know, do that. One thing I have not really done a whole lot of, is actually giving you, like, background information on the book of Ephesians. Partly because I started in in the very middle of the letter. I didn't really give you the beginning of it. So that does make it a bit different. But I can do a little bit of that now because, again, I don't want to give you too much of what I'm going to talk about on Sunday. And that means there's not a whole lot I can do here, but I want to give you a podcast. So let's talk about Ephesus. And I need to pull up something, and it's just taking a little bit of time. Okay, so the city of Ephesus. Now, if you want to picture a map and try and find where Ephesus is it's on the west coast of Turkey. So, you know, if you're imagining Turkey as it kind of really forms a giant peninsula, you know, sticking out into the Aegean Sea, Turkey's on the Aegean coast of Turkey, kind of south central. The city is actually not on the coast anymore, because the land has spread, essentially. We'll get to that in a minute. So the city itself is really old. It's fairly certain that we've got evidence of it dating back to the Hittite civilization 2,000 years B.C., 2,000 years before the Roman era and the birth of Christ, called something different at that time, called Apasa, when it was led by the Hittites. So that's very much Old Testament times. That is before the Exodus, for sure, likely before Abraham's time. So very, very old site of human habitation. By the time Paul arrives, it is a major port city, and it has a population somewhere in the neighborhood of 330,000 people. So the city is, you know, almost as big as Corpus Christi is today, and in the ancient world, that is enormous. This is a mega city in the ancient world, and so you've got one of the largest and most influential cities in the Roman Empire. There are not many cities that are going to be bigger or more important than Ephesus. the city today, it's a little over 6 miles inland today. At the time, you had it was on the shore, but the water was very shallow, and the harbor was kind of gradually silting up from the river that flowed into it. So it's no longer on the coast today, but at the time, it was a coastal city. And it houses the temple of the goddess Artemis, which is one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. Now, the original temple was built about 560 BC, burned down in 356 BC, was rebuilt. And it's quite large. It's about 340 feet by 165 feet. It has these incredible famous marble columns, which are each about 60 feet tall and 5 feet thick. And it's just this monumental, amazing building that would have blown people's minds back then. And it is, people literally travel from all over the empire to come and see this temple. Now, Paul's time in Ephesus is especially fruitful. We know that from the book of Acts. Luke in the Acts tells the story that even like pieces of clothing, handkerchiefs and aprons that Paul had touched are being used to heal the sick. So this, the Holy Spirit is doing amazing things in Ephesus. And what happens is this causes a confrontation with the people who worship Artemis, particularly with the people who sell these little silver shrines, silver idols, little statues of Artemis, because they have this steep drop in sales. They're losing money. And so they initiate a riot. And the riot happens in this big Roman theater, which is a pretty big stadium. You know, it seats about 24,000 people. Far and away the biggest public space in town. If you've ever been in the Middle East or Europe and been in a Roman theater, you know how big and grand they can feel. So, Paul's ministry begins fruitfully, but then it ends on this really painful note where Paul is sort of kicked out and forced to leave. And it's implied in his later letters that he actually has sort of a mental breakdown as a result of this. Which kind of explains, just as an aside, why there is like a shift in the way he writes his letters and the tone he takes in a lot of these letters. Some biblical scholars have used that as evidence that Paul didn't actually write all the letters that claim to be from Paul, but there's just not really any reason to believe that. It makes perfect sense that after this incredibly traumatic event, Paul is going to experience profound change and write a bit differently. And that happens in Ephesus. So for Paul, Ephesus is a really central part of his ministry and his life. He has like the most fruitful ministry he's ever experienced in Ephesus. He spends over a year in that city, watching the Holy Spirit doing amazing things, and then it all comes crashing down overnight in this horrifying, very alarming, terrifying event. I don't know that there's any other city that would be as important to him as Ephesus. So, he writes this letter to them, to this church, in one of the largest, most important cities of the Roman Empire. This city where he knows that they have seen the Holy Spirit doing amazing things. Where he knows that they are in danger. And has experienced that danger firsthand himself. And he writes all about how to live as a Christian. And we can't lose sight of the amount of courage it takes for these Christians to live faithfully in this place. They've already seen how the people of Ephesus react to the movement of God. And it's violent and it's volatile and it's unpredictable. And this is the people to whom Paul writes about putting on the whole armor of God. As you read, I would encourage you, before Sunday, read Ephesians 6, 10 through 28. Really, I mean, if you want, read the whole letter all at once. With that background in mind, Paul is writing to this church where he spent a year with them, he loves them, he knows them deeply, and he had to leave because his life was in danger. It all comes crashing down in this big traumatic thing. They are all probably traumatized by this. They're all living in fear. And that's the people who are reading this letter the first time. Bear that in mind as you read it. I'm going to pivot now and talk a little bit about what I'm going to be doing for the next month. I'm going to be talking about evangelism for the next month. Now, I say that word and people get freaked out. But the church doesn't grow if the church doesn't evangelize. Simple as that. So we have to evangelize, and what does that mean? Well, look, there are some people who have like the gift of evangelism, right? Like Billy Graham is the classic example that comes to my mind. I don't have that gift. Most of you don't have that gift. I'm going to argue most of God's people don't have that gift, but also I'm going to argue that for the most part, that way of doing evangelism is not the best way. It's not the most effective way. The best way of doing evangelism is one-on-one. The best way of doing evangelism is making friends with people who don't know Jesus, who need to know him. And they get to know him through you. Now, this means, of course, that you as a Christian need to know what you believe, and you need to know why you believe it, and you need to be able to articulate the God you know. You need to be able to articulate what Jesus has done for you, why you trust him, why you follow him, and do it well. You need to be able to share your testimony in just a few sentences. And you need to be willing, this is the simplest part, honestly, to invite people to church. That's what we're all going to build towards. I'm going to challenge you all at the end of the month. I'm going to have a specific challenge for you to begin inviting people to church. We're going to give you a number of people to invite and a timeline, a generous, generous timeline. We'll probably do it like between the end of August and Christmas to invite a certain number of people to church. And the reason we're doing this, one, I want to get you comfortable with inviting people to church, because more than like 90% of people who come to a church who were not previously churchgoers go to church because they were invited, not because they stumbled upon it or because they heard it was really good or because they found the pastors preaching online and thought it was great or because any of those reasons. Now think about it. We've had new people coming to our church. We've had people who've moved to town and been looking for a new church. We've had people who just have heard that things are going well and they come. We've had people who have seen my preaching online and have joined the church because of that. But when you stop and think about it, if that represents less than 10% of the people who could have come to church with us in the last year, that means if we had been inviting people to church, we could have nearly doubled in size by now. That's the power of evangelism. Real evangelism, where you actually invite someone. You don't just say, hey, you should come to my church. You say, would you like to come to church with me? And that the last two words are really important. You make it clear that they are coming as your guest, that you will be there, that you will sit with them, that you might take them out to lunch afterwards, right? That this is, they are coming with you, not just, they're not just coming to the same church as you. They are there with you. That it's a personal thing. And you know, lots of people are going to say no. And that's okay. You can't control what they do. All you can control is, did you invite them or not? Which means the invitation is the win. Whether they say yes or not, it's a win if you invite them. So even now, before, you know, 2 weeks before I start preaching this, I'm going to go ahead and encourage you, if you're listening to this, to start inviting people. Start encouraging people you know to come to church with you. Bring them with you. If they need a ride, go pick them up. But let's stop waiting for people to just discover that our church is here. And let's start telling people that our church is here and that God is doing great things through us and that we want them to come and see. That's all for this week, folks, because I don't want to give away too much, but I'll be back next week with another podcast. God bless.